Welcome to Chef Journeys. Boy, oh boy, have I got a fun one for you guys today. I'm so excited to bring one of the people that I consider my mentors, one of the people that really helped me shape the way I wanted to be the chef. And so this is a story from a kitchen in a galaxy far, far away. But I really think you're going to enjoy getting to meet John Harris and getting to hear his story, because it's earnest and it's genuine and it's real. And honestly, it's kind of cool. So without further ado, here is John Harris on Chef Journeys. I'd be lying if I didn't say that the amount of respect I have for you, John, is it's so big. That's the best way I can describe it. So welcome to the show, and thank you for joining us today.
Absolutely. It's my pleasure.
Right on. Gosh, I feel it's been almost 25 years since we worked together. And I think that your career has gone a long way. I know mine has been a whole long way since I was in Florida. But since this is Chef Journeys, I really wanted to just kind of jump in and dig in on, like, how'd you come to this industry? How did you get in the kitchen?
Well, honestly, it's because I have a love of winter skiing, snow skiing. And I graduated from a small college in Maine with a degree in psychology. Nice. And I wanted to go be a ski bum for a year before I got a real job in the real world. And I didn't know what that was going to be. I didn't want to be a psychologist, but I didn't know what I was going to do. So I went out to Utah to snowbird, and I talked my way into being a cook at a little Mexican restaurant at the resort. It was called the Mexican Keyhole. And one of the questions that I was asked when I was being interviewed for this, and I had cooked at the college pub for a little bit, so I had a little bit of cooking experience, not very much. But one of the questions that this lady asked me, she said, "Can you handle a knife?" And I had, this is kind of crazy, but my senior year at college, I was had been doing a lot of whittling with a penknife, pocket knife. Okay. And when she said, "Can you handle a knife?" I go, "Sure, I can handle a knife." Not knowing that within a couple of days, I'd be having a 10-inch chef's knife in my hand. And I was going, "Oh, my God, what is this giant thing?" But anyway, she hired me, and I worked at Snowbird, got to ski over 100 days each year for the first 4 years I was there. Worked at the Mexican Keyhole for 2 years. Then I was enjoying cooking and wanted to get a little bit more, expand my knowledge some. So I literally went upstairs to the gourmet restaurant at the resort and worked there for 2 years. Then I was doing well, and there was an opening for a kitchen manager / chef at another small, really fine dining restaurant at Snowbird. And I got that position. So that's where I learned my chops at Snowbird while I was making turns in the powder in the trees.
That's awesome.
And it just led to a career. I had no idea I was going to be a chef.
Huh. Yeah. Okay. So the more chefs I talk to and the more episodes of this I do, there's this amazing recurring thing. We get into the industry, and then somewhere along the way, we like, stuck is not the right word, but that's what it is. We get stuck, like stuck or hooked or addicted or whatever you want to call it. So what was that for you? Like, what kept you in the industry? Like,
Well, first of all, I was pretty good at what I was doing. I was successful in every restaurant that I worked at. I really liked the adrenaline of a busy Friday or Saturday night doing the dance in the kitchen with everybody and just cranking out really great food that the customers were enjoying, and hearing the feedback from the servers as they brought the empty scraped plates back to the dishwasher. And so that was a big part of it. I can't lie. The the atmosphere of after work was pretty fun too. I'm sure you know what I mean.
Yes, I do.
There were a lot of late nights, a lot of good times after work at different bars and pubs and people's houses. That was a lot of fun then. But, you know, that kind of faded into wherever after a while, and just working in the kitchen with a bunch of good people who were all kind of on the same trail, focusing on giving our customers a really great experience. That was a big part of it. So all those things combined.
Yeah. I mean, for me, culture was like the underlying or underbelly culture, whatever you want to call it. Right. Like, yeah, that was always huge for me. It was so much fun.
Yeah. The Kitchen Confidential stuff, right?
Yeah. The Bourdain and his pirates, you know?
Yeah.
You know, it's funny. You mentioned Bourdain, and I remember reading Kitchen Confidential and just thinking to myself, this guy sees me. You know, I mean, so much so that, like, there's a thing in Kitchen Confidential where he talks about, like, seeing the chef being outside the restaurant with the lady who's just gotten married. I'm pretty sure that when I was in Provincetown, I stayed in a house that was across the street from that restaurant. Like, I'm pretty sure that, like, I figured out what restaurant it is, and that's where I was like, that really describes that restaurant and that whole area. I'm like, that's actually where I think I lived. So that was always interesting to me.
Yeah, I'm sure.
You know, so we worked together in Florida. I guess I would say, how does one go from Utah to Florida? And then by the time I met you, you were the executive chef and food and beverage director, both, which I remember thinking was absolutely amazing, that one person could hold two such large hats. But, like, what was that corner that got turned that led you to Florida and led you to kind of holding that position? Because, as you said, it lasted a while.
Yeah, 30 years.
Wow.
So after 6 years at Snowbird, the last year while I was working at Snowbird, I think I only skied maybe 4 or 5 times. Wow. And I was really getting into cooking and doing some research on it. And I wanted to learn more about it. And by then I figured, well, maybe this could be a career for me that could be successful. So I left there and I went down into Salt Lake Valley, opened up a little place with the manager of the last place I had worked at Snowbird. And his name was Pete. And he talked me into doing this. So we opened up a little shop. It was open for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And breakfast and lunch were pretty standard fare. Dinner, we were doing rack of lamb and different kinds of fresh fish. So we were kind of stepped it up for dinner.
Right.
We struggled, as a lot of restaurants do. And then Pete came in one day and he said, John, I can't handle this anymore. I got to go to San Francisco. I said, okay, Pete, when are you leaving? He goes, right now, my car is packed. I just wanted to stop by and say goodbye. And that was the last I ever saw of him. And when we opened up the restaurant, the deal was he was going to take care of the front of the house, the waitresses, the books, everything to do with that. And I was going to run the kitchen. Wow. So all of a sudden I'm running a restaurant and I have really very limited experience in the front of the house.
Right.
So I muddled through that for probably another 6 or 8 months and then just realized this wasn't going to make it. And I shut it down. Then I got a couple jobs in downtown Salt Lake City at some small scratch kitchens. Okay. And worked at each one of those for about a year and wanted to get more training, more experience in a more formal position than a little tiny restaurant. So I applied at the Sheraton Hotel in Salt Lake City and had the good fortune to be hired there as a saucier. The chef there is a guy I consider my mentor. His name is Bernhard Goetz. He's a German guy, came up through the ranks. He did the apprenticeship over in Germany, which had a lot of great stories about. And he was a very knowledgeable, very good chef. And I was at the right place at the right time because I went from saucier to executive chef and got promoted 4 or 5, maybe 6 times between those two positions in a matter of, I want to say, 3.5, maybe 4 years.
Wow.
So I would became the executive chef of the Sheraton in Salt Lake City and was there for 2 years. Red Lion, Wesco, you probably know Red Lion Hotels.
Yep.
Yep. Well, Red Lion bought the Sheraton in Salt Lake City. And I stayed on with them for about another 8 months or so. Then when Red Lion bought Sheraton, a lot of people from Sheraton left and went to other Sheratons around the country. And one of the sales ladies from the Salt Lake Sheraton came down to the Sheraton Sand Key, and she called me up and said, would you be interested in coming down and interviewing for the executive chef position here? And I said, sure, because I wasn't skiing. I'd been the executive chef at the Sheraton out there for a couple of years. It was at the time, it was the biggest hotel in Salt Lake City. It's not anymore. And I thought, well, you know, maybe I'll go down to Florida and check out the beaches, check out the babes for a couple of years, and then see what happens after that. So they flew me down, and I interviewed and went back up to my room. They got me a room for a couple of nights, and before I left, they called me back down and offered me the position. So, Wow. Yeah, it was kind of a wham, bam, thank you, ma'am thing with them. I flew back and gave a 3-week notice to the hotel in Salt Lake and came back down here. And it wasn't a couple of years and beach and babes. It was 30 years and 2 kids and 2 grandkids. Wow. So, yeah, kind of turned into something different than I had anticipated.
So I've had some okay stints. You know, I worked for a company for 9 years and another one for 5. I never really went long, or extra long.
But yeah, extra long.
What would you say are some of the things that, you know, kind of attributed to that longevity?
I was pretty much free to do what I wanted in the kitchen within reason. I mean, you know, I had to stay within what our customers would want.
Right.
And as I stayed there, when I first started there, the restaurants were the main focus, and we were doing a large volume at the quote unquote fine dining room. And we had a poolside cafe that had food. We had a small restaurant that served lunch and dinner for a while. And we had a bar that had some bar snacks. We had room service and we had banquets, but mainly it was the outlets that were driving the business there. As the sales staff changed and the focus of the sales staff changed, they started going after big groups. And so we started doing more and more banquets. And that's what I really enjoyed. I really enjoyed the banquet side of the business because I was able to just be almost as creative as I could be. We did, there was one dinner. It was a really, really nice dinner. I don't remember who it was for, but it was for about 150 people. And I proposed a hot and cold foie gras appetizer to them. So, and they thought that was a great idea. So I spent a lot of time actually timing how long the foie gras would need to be in the oven, getting the temperature of the plates right so that it couldn't be hot because it would cool the cold foie. I would heat up the cold foie gras. They couldn't be cold because it would cool down the hot foie gras. So I did a lot of timing, how many plates I could get in the oven at a time, how the servers would line up to get the plates and get it in the room on time. And that was one of the fun things that, you know, that was one of the things that type of things that kept me there, being creative like that. And we were able to get those 150 plates, I think, out of the kitchen in a couple of minutes, the way we had it worked out. And that was a really memorable service that we did. And then we started doing what we called a crab fest, which was, I don't think you were there for the Crab Fest, were you?
I don't recall. I don't think so.
Yeah, it started out as the Christmas party where we would do about 600 or 700 people in the ballroom, and we do massive ice carvings that I did, and you know, just different themed events, different theme parties. Then we took it out onto the beach, and it was a thank you party for our best customers and the customers or people that we wanted to be our customers. And it was for about 500 or 600 people.
Yeah.
We called it a crab fest because when it started, we were focusing on stone crab, which is we timed it at the end of the stone crab season. In the first year, I think I had 8 different kinds of crab that we featured. And then we transitioned into lobsters, and we would cook 600, 700 lobsters to order out on the beach and crack them. We had 6 or 7 stations each year, and it was a different theme each year. One time it was Brazil, and we had the Brazilian meat skewers where we would carve, slicing it off, putting it on plates. Another time I got some whole alligators from Louisiana and put those on a spit and roasted those and pulled the meat off, pulled the ribs off. And oh, this is one of my favorite things we did. We had a, I found a guy in Tampa who had water buffalo. And this was quite a few years ago before there was a lot of true buffalo mozzarella available. But I got together with him and he was making his own true buffalo mozzarella fresh with the milk from his cows.
Wow.
And so I did a massive cheese display with 6 different kinds of cheese from his water buffalo's milk. And then we brought 3 of the water buffaloes over, put them on the beach in a pen. So here I was standing behind this beautiful display of tomatoes and basil and cheese and everything else you can imagine. And people would go, what kind of cheese is that? And I go, oh, that's fresh mozzarella. And it came from that cow right back there, which was awesome. So those were the kind of things that really kept me going for a long time. And yeah, I think it was just, I was able to use my creativity and come up with some really unique experiences for our guests.
That's awesome. I mean, farm to table takes a whole new meaning when you bring the farm to the table, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I love it. I love it. Oh man. I think that I look back on the time that I spent, I think I spent almost 3 years working for you. And I just remember that there was never in a time and time and space where other kitchens were aggressive and they were competitive and they were and people were yelling and screaming. I never experienced that in at all at the Sheraton Sand Key. There wasn't any yelling. There was a good amount of teaching, and I always felt like if I didn't know something and I needed to learn it, I could go to somebody there and they would teach me how to kind of figure out that next set of skills. You know, and I always appreciated that, especially after being in Florida and going to California and really just sticking myself in the hotbed of these kitchen. I worked in a series of kitchens where they were aggressive and competitive, and people were stashing mise en place in the walk-in so that the next shift couldn't get it. And you know, I always looking back to my time in Florida. You know, it was easily one of those times where it's like, wow, I was able to learn and progress in a nice, safe space. So right. I gotta thank you now for that.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate that.
Well, gosh, I can't tell you how much I appreciate you coming and talking to us. You know, are there any last thoughts as you kind of look out into the ether and you have the opportunity to talk to folks who are coming up in the industry or getting in the industry? I mean, any thoughts for us?
I think it's a really good industry to work in if you have a really great work ethic and you're willing to learn. I mean, nobody knows everything about cooking. There's always something to learn, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. We do did an event at the hotel. I got kind of got it started, but it was a fundraiser for culinary students in Pinellas County. And we've raised, a couple million dollars in the last 16 years to give scholarships to these students. So
awesome.
I'm very pro the career, the kitchens, learning in kitchens, hospitality. I think it's a great, but it's definitely not for everybody. One thing I always told people was when they said, hey, I want to go to culinary school. Well, don't just go now, work in the kitchen for a couple of years and see if it's something that's really for you. If you, after a couple of years and you've been peeling potatoes and washing dishes and pounding out veal or whatever it is, and you like it, then go to culinary school if you want to, but you don't need to. But it has been a great career for me. And my new career as a fishmonger is something that's definitely related to what I've been doing, what I was doing for 40 years or so. And it's been worked out well for me. It's been a journey that I've enjoyed.
Awesome. I think it's great that I think you and I talked at one point and we kind of threw around the words, oh, I'm just a chef. So I think it's great to realize that there's other opportunities that are adjacent, that are parallel to the culinary industry, to the restaurant industry, to hospitality, that, you know, when you talk about being a fishmonger, I think that's an amazing piece of perspective, right? Like you can go off and you can help with becoming a vendor and feeding that industry that has fed you so much. So I think that's pretty awesome.
Yep.
All right. Well, once again, I wanted to thank you so much. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. It's always a pleasure to hear what's going on and hear how much you had brought to the Sheraton in San Key. But also I think it's very clear that while this can be a very transient industry, I think there are places to find that are great places to just kind of become your harbor, and they allow you a 30-year stint, which is just absolutely incredible. So
yes, I agree 100% with that.
You know, it makes me happy to hear that you were able to do that, and that there are chefs out there that are able to find a career where you can stick around and provide for your family, have kids and grandkids, because that's not every case. I know a number of chefs who have their career has done real well and other parts haven't done so great. So,
right.
Well, like I said, this has been another episode of Chef Journeys. Thank you, John Harris, for joining us. And we'll catch you next time.